The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Hello, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we are talking about a wide range of different subjects today. But today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Janet. We've talked about this topic a lot over the years, and that's vaccines in general. I think today, specifically, we'll be talking more about the flu vaccine. And our guest has firsthand knowledge of some of the side effects of the flu vaccine. Our guest is Colette Caputo. Good morning, Colette.
Hi, good morning.
Now, she's a PA, a physician's assistant, so she's got a health background. And I'm going to let you tell your story in a second, but had you been getting flu shots every year? Or
no, I have not. Was not doing
so. So this was the first time you had a flu shot and you had side effects from it?
Oh, yes, I did.
All right. Let's see.
My question for Colette is, you had not necessarily been getting a regular flu shot, flu vaccine every year. What made you decide to begin?
Well, I work in an outpatient medical practice, and the flu shot was being offered from our employers as a, perk, so to say. And I think I went against my gut feeling and just kind of went with the flow of the situation and allowed it to be administered to me.
Interesting that you had a gut feeling about it.
Yes.
No, had you had any feelings pro or against vaccines in general?
No, I hadn't prior to
You never this. Gave it any thought?
No.
Like most of the people in your office?
Believing that they should be beneficial. You know, right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And have you changed your opinion of vaccines?
Significantly, I have.
So, all right. So tell all this is exactly what happened to you.
Okay. In 2008 is when the flu shot was administered to me in the fall season. And within a week of it being administered to me, I was experiencing significant neurologic and endocrine symptoms. The symptoms first started as involuntary muscle twitching and muscle contraction and jerky motions. I developed a neuropathy that was severe in my left lower extremity. Then my left leg, it was like a foot drop, or my foot would drag on the floor. Also at that time, I was in like a hypermetabolic state. I was sweating profusely and my heart would race, which is called tachycardia in medical terms. Have loose stools coming out like water, had very difficulty breathing, and had a fever also at the time, and had problems swallowing foods and fluids.
Now, when these symptoms first appeared, did you connect them with the flu shot at the time?
It was within the first few days after it being administered to me, and up until that point, I was a very young, active, athletic woman. Never had any significant health issues before, so I did make a connection pretty immediately.
And then you went to see some doctors.
Well, initially, I went to a hospital local to our community here, Memorial West in Pembroke Pines. And I was in the emergency department, and they did admit me into the hospital at that time with not a specific diagnosis. It took a couple days for a neurologist to actually round and see me in the hospital, despite these symptoms I had. And I went through the gamut of MRIs and CAT scans and blood testing, brain EEGs, all kinds of things. And at the time, they thought that I might have been having a hyperthyroid storm or MS. They just weren't really able to pinpoint what was going on. I did tell them that I had a flu shot administered to me, and they seemed to take that out of the equation. That wasn't something that they were working up as part of a cause of to what was happening to me at the time.
Not that they could do anything about it anyway. If it were a reaction to a flu shot or any of the other issues.
There wouldn't be any kind of medical level immune stimulation that would be of benefit. No.
No. I mean.
Okay.
That would just be, you know, you make the diet, you know, the diagnosis is going to be actually a description of her complaints.
An accumulation of symptoms.
And did they, on that hospitalization, did they ever come to a conclusion as to what you had?
No, they didn't. And actually, when I was there, my symptoms were progressively worsening. As I was admitted in that hospital, I was there for almost a week. I released myself from the hospital, and then at that point, I was taken to Jackson Memorial Hospital at the University of Miami, where I was once again admitted there. I was there for a week, and they ran the gamut of tests on me all over again. They looked for Lyme disease. They thought lupus. They thought MS. And the only thing that was really showing significant at the time was an unstable thyroid level. They weren't really finding anything else that was contributing to these cascade of symptoms that I was going through. Upon discharge from that hospital, they diagnosed me with hyperthyroid storm. So it was unknownst still of what the true cause, what was going on at that time.
Kind of a medical guess. Happens a lot.
Well, in all fairness, even multiple sclerosis is a difficult diagnosis to make. It's almost a diagnosis of exclusion. You couldn't find any other cause for the problem, and you have the collection of symptoms that suggest it, and then maybe they might see on an MRI some of the usual appearances that you see with MS. Okay, you have MS.
I'm thinking two relatively young adults that have come to see me in the last year, both diagnosed with MS. And then when you read the literature, Dr. Slavin, you see that there's information that there are greater numbers of MS diagnoses in younger and younger people. And so I'm starting to think about this. I never inquired of these clients of mine had they had a flu vaccine. And it just is, opening another door in my mind about how to work with them.
Well, remember in yesterday's program, we talked about certain heavy metals like mercury and aluminum found in these vaccines being associated with neurological damage. And now you just have to keep an open mind. I mean, the symptoms that Colette was experiencing was neurological damage. And then they just put a name to it. How long did it take them to give you a real diagnosis?
Well, that's an interesting question. It was 4 years.
It
was 4 years. The symptoms were worsening over time and then came into chronic scenario where I was having an unbalanced endocrine system. So I was losing weight and then gaining weight, losing weight and gaining weight, losing hair, having problems with my bowels, my GI tract. That was one of the most significant concerns throughout those 4 years. I ended up with what's called dysbiosis, and I was becoming immune compromised from what was not found at the time. Ended up having yeast overbearingly growing on my throat, my tonsils, where I'd have to debride it myself daily. It was in my esophagus. It came out in my stool, positive in stool fecal matter tests, in my, vaginally discharged yeast infections on my skin.
Were you treated with antibiotics prior to this?
I was treated interimly because I would get ill while all this was going on. So I would seek my internist for care at the time and was placed on antibiotics. I was seeing ENTs for, chronic sinus infections. I was placed on antibiotics and steroids. And it was just a nightmare at the time.
So a lot of those symptoms you're describing are from the antibiotics and not from the original flu shot.
Well, in addition to, because I already had the symptoms that were significant prior to being administered these chemical drugs. And I ended up seeing a barrage of endocrinologists at the Cleveland Clinic and at the University of Miami and locally, and as well as top-notch what were considered neurologists, both at the University of Miami and the Cleveland Clinic and here in the local community as well. And none of them came up with the diagnosis. The one diagnosis I had was called dystonia, which is actually a symptom, but it can be a diagnosis as well, where I have involuntary motion and contraction and spasms of the head and neck and the oromandibular joints and shoulders and extremities. And that was the diagnosis neurologically based. It was in the year 2012. This is interesting how my diagnosis really came to be is, I was actually seeking guidance, from a psychic spiritual counselor. Okay. And her name was Katrina, and I was actually calling to inquire about a relationship I was in at the time. In our conversation, she pleasantly interrupted and mentioned that your spiritual guardian would like to talk about your health. And it was through that conversation that she mentioned that my guardian was overseeing and saying that I had mercury toxicity that was from a flu shot. And she had mentioned, I've never met this person in my life, and she had mentioned that she had seen that I had been in and out of hospitals. I was in a stroke unit once, I forgot to mention that too, for 4 days at Northwest Hospital. And that I had to leave Western medicine as we know it to seek holistic and integrative care in order to start restoring my life. And I took a leap of faith. And I did just that. And I first left Western medicine and found an integrative specialist in Boca Raton. Her name is Dr. Joy Howe. She's from China. And she's an internist as well in Western medicine, degreed from University of Miami. And she did a provocative test and to find the heavy metals. And she did find it. I had a urine collection done, and I was tested with DMSO and DMSA. Acid to bind the metals out, and results took 2 weeks. And sure enough, the mercury load was very toxic, actually read off the chart. And spiritually, my guardian was right. And from there, I started a whole holistic path. And that's what launched me into how I am today and helped to save my life.
What an amazing, amazing journey. Very, very disheartening when you think we accept that the medical experts are going to have the wisdom, the training, the tools at their fingertips to help us in such an extreme situation, and all of this technology doesn't necessarily lead us in the right direction. That if you have the foods and the herbs and the natural substances, and I'm going to say even the energetic substances that would be associated with homeopathic practice and, you know, very special herbal extracts, you can achieve dramatic recoveries. And I'm so excited to hear your story.
Did you have any exposure to mercury prior to this that you know of?
No. I had been asked that question before in regards to cavities and tooth fillings, and I've never had a cavity in my life, I'm very proud to say. So there's no fillings in my mouth. To my knowledge, no, I've never had any.
Fish consumption?
I was a low fish eater, so okay. I wouldn't know, but yeah.
One of the areas of potential contamination, not with mercury, but with arsenic, is poultry, because the feed given to the poultry is very, very high arsenic content. So that also can be a contributing factor. And once again, yeah, just before the show, I was talking about synergy, how small amounts of different things can combine to create a very significant response or issue. Were you someone who ate a good amount of chicken or turkey?
Yeah, I am. I'm a big chicken eater, that's for sure. Yes.
Okay.
They don't put that on a label, like arsenic-free chicken.
isn't that interesting?
Well, what's the latest on arsenic-free rice?
Okay. What I was telling people is if you're choosing to use organic rice, then the typical applications of pesticides, herbicides, and so on wouldn't have been made to those organic crops, and consequently, the arsenic content would be lower. I don't have any information about how it's been measured, but it's a concern when you're choosing rice and you're thinking you're doing a good thing for yourself. I hear music, and consequently, we need to take a break right here on Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very special guest, Colette Caputo, and we will be right back.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very special guest, Colette Caputo. And before we get back to our discussion, I do want to remind everyone that on September 9th, which is a Wednesday evening, we are having a thermography seminar at the Institute of Advanced Medicine. And you can find the Institute of Advanced Medicine at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard in Lauderhill. And thermography, for those listeners who might not necessarily be familiar with the concept, is an option for women who are interested in evaluating breast health. And to get all of the details about how thermography should be properly done, how it should be interpreted, all of the information you need about thermography, come on into the seminar. And if you'd like to make a reservation, the number to call, 954-748-4991, and that's for the thermography seminar Wednesday, September 9th at 7 p.m. at the Institute of Advanced Medicine, 954-748-4991. Dr. Slavin?
Okay, we've been talking about one specific instance of a vaccine side effect. You still suffering, Colette, from any of these side effects?
Yes. Yes, I am. I still have cervical and what's called oromandibular dystonias. They're more subtle now, the spastic involuntary motions and contractions of my head and neck and facial area. And also I have a continuous neuropathy in my left leg. And I have proximal, which means the upper part of your thigh, weakness.
Have they come to a consensus as to the your diagnosis?
Yes, they have. Once I did have the results in black and white, literally in my hands, that I was toxic with mercury, which was believed to be from thiomersal that was found in the vaccine. I went back and reported back to my neurologists here in the local community, and it was believed that I had suffered from Guillain-Barré syndrome acutely at the time when I was hospitalized, yet they weren't manifesting that diagnosis.
And did they connect the Guillain-Barré with the flu shot? Is that still so now? Even they're convinced that this was a reaction to the flu shot.
Yes, 100% from what my history shows.
So what we talk about is, all right, where is the evidence that you should risk the side effects of from a vaccine, in this case the flu shot, in order to prevent the flu? How do you weigh the risk-benefit ratio on this one?
So certainly from the research provided to us by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, we can trust their information. Thank goodness you laughed, because that really was a joke, but it was it fell a little flat there for a moment.
All right.
I was holding myself back.
I found a very good article. It's on the website, Moms Against Mercury. But if you Google this, Doctors Question Flu Shot Statistics, you'll be able to find this article. And it was written by Kelly O'Mara, who's a journalist, and interviewed doctors and and they were saying pretty much the same thing I was saying. Show me the proof that flu shots work. Give me the actual numbers. How many people actually get the flu? How many people actually die from the flu? So I can decide, if I want to take a chance with the flu shot. Now, remember last year, and this has happened many times over the years with flu shots, but last year in particular, they said, well, we missed it again. We don't have the right strains in our flu vaccine. But take it anyway, because it might help. And in this particular article, they comment on a prior year, same thing happened. There was absolutely no proof that it did any good, helped anybody, and they were telling people take it anyway. This is a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry, vaccines. And, we need to have better statistics if you're going to get people to risk some of the side effects associated with vaccines. How many people should be allowed to get sick like you did, Colette, and keep the vaccines on the shelf versus maybe we shouldn't be so quick to use vaccines? Do we allow 1 out of 100, 1 out of 1,000, 1 out of 1,000,000? What do you think a good number would be, Colette?
Zero.
Boy, am I in agreement with that. Zero.
Because if it's Colette, it's 100%. Right.
It is an issue, and I'm going to say certainly flu vaccine is right in our faces because it's drummed into us every season. You must get your flu vaccine. This year's strain is very strong. It's going to be a pandemic. People are going to die. We won't be able to handle in the hospitals all of the people who are going to be so ill from the flu. And the truth of the matter is, December comes, January comes, and none of these dire predictions tend to come true. But then we have there are so many other vaccines that are equally dangerous, and I think your question just kind of brought this to mind, Dr. Slavin. How many deaths should we accept? How many serious injuries must we accept? And I'm talking about the human papillomavirus, the HPV vaccine it started out being given to older teenage girls. Then the age reduction went lower and lower and lower. And I think that they are recommending, some pediatricians are recommending that this HPV vaccine be given to girls as young as 10. And then the change began to happen. We need to give it to the teenage boys as well. And when you start to think about all of the contaminants in any vaccine, the dangers that we're exposing these very vulnerable humans too, because when your hormones are changing, as you mentioned, Colette, the endocrine system was so affected, so potentially damaged, and here we're giving it to vulnerable preteens and teens. And to what end? Because it doesn't protect them from a very, very great number of human papillomaviral strains.
Well, I don't want to get sidetracked too much, but okay. I want to remind our listeners about something we talked about regarding the tetanus vaccine. Remember okay. that, Janet?
Yes.
I don't know if Colette knows this story. And I didn't believe it, actually, when I first read it. And I said, and then I Googled it, and sure enough, it was reported there. In I think it was in the Philippines, maybe Mexico. I'm not sure exactly what countries. They were using the tetanus vaccine to sterilize females. Now, how would they do that? Very ingenious, actually. You've heard of the hormone HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. That's a hormone that women who are pregnant produce a lot of because it supports the pregnancy. So they combined the tetanus vaccine with HCG. So now when they gave it to women, the women developed antibodies against HCG. So if they ever got pregnant, they couldn't support the pregnancy because the body would immediately attack the HCG component of it, and that's the way they sterilize women. What was interesting about it is when they were advertising that everybody should get this tetanus vaccine, they were only advertising to women. You know, why didn't the men need it, you know?
But, a little tip-off there agenda.
So that creates some uncertainty about what's really behind the push for vaccines. What are they really trying to do? Because if you can see they can sterilize people with it, who knows what else they can figure out to do when they get everybody on board with a vaccine.
It's a very, very interesting situation, Colette.
You know, yeah, if I can just inject, you know, as a dermatology practitioner, I see about 30 to 50 patients a day sometimes, and a handful of them are patients that are presenting with shingles and an active eruption of a viral syndrome, reporting that they had recently been vaccinated for the shingles vaccine to prevent it. Yet they're presenting to me within a few months, within the year of having that vaccine, with a full-blown eruption, you know. So the question is that vaccine really working, you know? What is it really doing to these patients? Because the antibodies are not being formed, and they're still presenting acutely with viral syndrome. You know.
So what you're saying is you're seeing shingles in people that have been vaccinated against shingles.
Correct.
Shortly after having received the vaccine, and I can support that because I also see clients who come to me absolutely confused because they listen to their doctor, you really are vulnerable, you need to take the shingles vaccine, and 3 and 4 months later, they're in my office with a heartbreakingly uncomfortable, painful outbreak.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break, but when we come back, I want to give out some statistics. We've all heard the number of 36,000. That's like the magic number of estimated deaths every year from the flu. But when we come back, we'll get into the real numbers, and then you can decide what you want to do. And the last point about the shingles vaccine, if you have a healthy immune system, you don't get sick. And if you don't have a healthy immune system, the vaccines don't work. So, you know, what are people really doing? They're not thinking. You know, in medical school, you're taught if an adult gets shingles, look for cancer. Look for something that's undermining their immune system. That's a signal that there's a breakdown in the immune system.
The other thing that I tend to talk to people about is the level of stress that they may be under and possibly lack of beneficial bacteria, the probiotics, so they don't absorb B vitamins and their minerals are unbalanced. So this nutritional safety net, so to speak, is not present for a variety of reasons. Then you add the stress, then you add the vaccine, and you've got the perfect storm.
And by the way, remember, AMT centers are our sponsor. They do all the tests that you can check on your own immune system function to see if you're doing everything in your power, because it's not a lack of drugs that's undermining your immune system. It's a lack of proper nutrition, maybe too much stress in your life, maybe exposure to environmental toxins. So you do the tests, and things are off, you have to look at a different area.
You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers. And as Dr. Slavin said, you can find all manner of forward-looking tests in order to evaluate the status of your health. And I will be back with Dr. Slavin and our very special guest, Colette Rico, in just 1 minute. Janet Cimaroli, and I'm here to tell you about Dr. Herb Slavin, the medical director of the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill. The Institute brings the latest natural approaches to health, supported by research. We offer a full range of traditional and holistic treatments. The primary goal of the Institute of Advanced Medicine is to give you, the patient, the information you need to stay healthy and live long. So before you feel sick, before you develop symptoms, come see the team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine. You can call today, 954-748-4991, to learn all about the services offered at the Institute. Services from on-demand to chiropractic, from natural skin solutions to nutrition testing and support. 954-748-4991. You can visit drslavin.com to learn more.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill. And you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment, 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our special guest, Colette Caputo. And we're talking about the issues associated with vaccines. Are they effective? Are they a way of protecting yourself against various illnesses? And we'll get to that discussion in a moment. I just want to remind everyone that on Wednesday, September 9th, at the Institute of Advanced Medicine, there will be a seminar on thermography. And thermography is a means of evaluating breast health far beyond what your mainstream medical practitioner may be offering to you. And if you'd like to join us at 7 o'clock, the number to call to make a reservation, 954-748-4991. And then another reminder, and we'll talk a little bit more about how some of the tests available at our sponsor's facility, AMT Centers, can be of assistance in opening your eyes, evaluating your immune status, your overall health status, your nutrition profile. And that's AMT Centers. And if you're interested in finding out more about Advanced Medical Testing Centers, you can call 754-216-2332. And that's the number to talk with someone at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Dr. Slavin,
All right. Thanks, Janet. Before the break, I mentioned, you know, the magic number was 36,000 deaths each year attributed to influenza. But you have to realize how they come up with this number. And by the way, it's only a guess. Those deaths are really deaths, not specifically from influenza, but from pneumonia. And they don't have to prove, or they don't prove, that the person that died from pneumonia had the flu. They just assume it was the flu that triggered the pneumonia and you died. Now, here are some interesting numbers. Between the between the 1970s or in the late 1970s, they used to give out, they say, between 10 and 15 million doses of flu vaccine to high-risk people. And that number, they've done a very good job in marketing, by the way. By the year 2001, 2002, they went from 10 to 15 million doses a season to 80 million doses.
Talk about follow the money.
Despite the enormous increase in the number of people receiving the influenza vaccine, and of course the CDC's public relations campaign to sell the vaccine, hasn't started yet this year, has it?
Maybe they've been listening to Natural Talk Radio.
So anyway, so they went from 10 to 15 million doses. They went up to 80 million doses. And despite that, there has not been a decrease in the population rate of influenza deaths or influenza illnesses. So in other words, we're vaccinating about 65 million more people, but the incidence of influenza and deaths attributed to influenza stay the same. So it sounds like it's totally irrelevant what the vaccine does. It's just about selling the vaccine. It doesn't matter if it works or not.
So a good marketing campaign doesn't matter. I'm looking at some data that says the vaccine efficacy runs from 0.14 to 0.33.
Well, that first number is actually a minus 0.14. So,
I saw that, and I didn't
14%. Now,
okay,
when it comes to this, you really can't have less than zero.
So, the zero means that statistically it's not different from zero, and it has no efficacy. So can you imagine if we were talking about a vitamin or an herb and we talked about its efficiency and the data showed that that level of efficacy, the FDA would run us out of town?
Well, here's another interesting thing. When you want to find out, you know, why people die and what's behind it, they've looked at studies where they were trying to determine trends in deaths over time, but they cannot address the effectiveness of the vaccination program since influenza vaccine information is not linked to death certificates or hospital data. So I'll give you another example. So if you die of pneumonia, they don't say secondary to the flu necessarily, so they can't really make a linkage there. Just like if you die from some type of cancer in a hospital, they say you died from that cancer. They don't necessarily link it to the treatment you received for that cancer. I mean, and just like Colette was experiencing some of the symptoms she was experiencing after she got sick, some of it was attributed to some of the treatment she had, namely the antibiotics. But they didn't link, you didn't say, you know, antibiotic caused dysbiosis, for example. But here's the thing that's really amazing. It used to be if you wanted to bring on a treatment, you had to prove it works.
That used to be, like common sense used to be.
It says here, the rules in science and medicine are that the vaccine manufacturers have to demonstrate efficacy. In other words, show me that it works. Show me that it diminishes the number of people getting the flu and diminishes the number of people dying from the flu. Now we have to demonstrate that it isn't efficacious. In other words, they operated on the assumption that it works, so everybody should get the flu, and now prove that it doesn't work. You know, they've got it kind of backwards. So what the CDC is saying, The data doesn't show that it is efficacious, but the numbers aren't good enough, so we're going to keep giving it. So, you know, in other words...
so, it's not very good, but we're going to do it anyway.
So they go on to say, they have to prove that the vaccine is working, and the CDC has no proof that it's working. The CDC reports that roughly 100 children die from influenza each year, but the data show that there really are only between 5 and 15 deaths in any given year. The CDC also touts the estimated 36,000 yearly deaths due to the influenza virus, but all you have to do is look at the CDC's own data to see that in reality, it may be only 1,000 deaths a year. And so it makes you sort of, if you question this, you start questioning everything. That's the problem.
Okay, so Dr. Slavin, you were talking earlier about the link with the HCG that was contaminating the tetanus vaccine that was given in some third world countries. And it was very specifically being given to the population there to reduce the birth rate. How do we know what contaminants or what deliberately added ingredients might be found in the flu vaccine? Because it is so widely marketed, what potential benefit might there be? And so my mind goes back to Dr. Len Horowitz and population control, that the globe can no longer support the rate of population growth that we've been experiencing, say, over the past 50 years, and the projection in the next 25 to 35 years is dramatic how the population will increase. So it is not far-fetched to think that some of the governments around the world would be very much behind this idea of vaccine as a population control manipulation.
Now, you mentioned Lennon Horowitz, but he wasn't the first one to ever talk about it.
Not at all.
I think if... historically speaking, you could, I don't know if it was the first time we saw it actually, you know, in pre-World War II Germany. You know, they talked about that, trying to make the a
superhuman
race.
Right.
And, you know, working on that type of issue. Now, if you were to, you know, to double check what we're saying, if you were to just put in Google population control methods, you know, there's a lot of stuff written written on it. You know, that's not a far-fetched or a conspiracy theory that we're talking about. It's actually been put into practice. That vaccine with HCG, that was a form of population control.
For sure. Now, with Colette's experience, the very dramatic endocrine disruption that you experienced. Can we assume that it was merely the mercury? Might it have been other components?
You know, I questioned that myself too, because of the such intense reaction that I had. You know, the mercury plus the heavy viral load plus formaldehyde that they sometimes use in these vaccines. All of these together, once again, the perfect storm, as you mentioned earlier, that's just cascading of all of this together. You have to wonder what else are the other components doing to humans, you know?
I mentioned on the show yesterday, vacinfo.org, a source of very good information about where people can find out exactly what the components of their flu shot and other vaccines might be. And you mentioned formaldehyde. And when people hear formaldehyde, their minds go back to high school biology, and maybe they don't formaldehyde injected into their bodies.
I don't know. When I hear formaldehyde, I think of embalming.
Right, right. When you had to do dissection in biology, those pictures were embalmed. That music means it's time for us to take a break. On Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli with Dr. Brooks Laban, and our special guest, Colette Caputo, will be right back.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via phone, Skype, or email with the convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., right here on this station. Did you know that you can be eating a healthy diet, but that your body may not be absorbing the vitamins and nutrients from your foods? Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a premier blood draw center servicing Genova Diagnostics Lab. Genova offers an advanced comprehensive blood test that identifies your body's deficiencies in absorbing vitamins, nutrients, and essential cofactors. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard in Lauderhill. They offer an on-time appointment guarantee and the lowest price guarantee. Schedule your appointment today for a blood draw for the Genova Diagnostics Nutritional Evaluation Test. Call Advanced Medical Testing Centers at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com.
To Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli with Dr. Herb Slavin and our special guest, Colette Caputo. And we are talking about vaccines today. And when you start to investigate this entire subject, it just leads to more and more and more questions.
And in order to get around that, for example, the state of California has mandated everybody get vaccines.
That's interesting. Okay. I don't know where the state of Florida stands now since that whole measles brouhaha, but every public school, the registrar is required to have on site a vaccine exemption form. And up until recently, and I don't know that anything has changed, you did not necessarily have to give a religious reason for the exemption or any particular personal reason. You just asked for the vaccine exemption. And I routinely see on the marquees outside of schools, no vaccine, no school. And that is not true. The government cannot force you to have a vaccine.
All right. Well, I think more and more people are becoming aware. I remember I told this story. I don't know if you've been in a hospital recently, but if you walk around the hospital, you'll see maybe half the staff wearing surgical masks and the others aren't. And I said, what's that all about? They said, well, the ones wearing the mask chose not to get the flu vaccine. So it's kind of interesting. Now, I mentioned, and what started me thinking about, well, or at least questioning, and I think that's the difference. People automatically accept what they're being told by mainstream medicine. And, you know, when you find that they lie about one thing or give misinformation or disinformation about one thing, then you start questioning everything they're telling you. And then the more you look into it, the more disinformation you find. Like one of the things we do here is chelation therapy. Now, if you would ask the average mainstream doctor about that, they say that's quackery, it's a waste of time. They don't know their history. And besides, they've never done it on patients to find out for themselves if it works. Chelation therapy was a mainstream medical practice before they developed the tools that enable them to make money doing bypass surgery, for example, instead of treating it more from the removing the cause of the illness. Bypass surgery is a form of an expensive Band-Aid put on the problem. We mentioned earlier about population control, and a lot of people think that might be a conspiracy. Google that and look into it for yourself. In this particular article, it says vaccine conspiracy or racist population control campaign, the Kenyan tetanus shot. So they did it in Kenya too, giving that same tetanus shot to people. And I think that it's just a real eye-opener when you start seeing these things, because you wouldn't expect it. I think people with normal thinking people just wouldn't think you'd want to combine something that's for the general safety of the public, but combine it with something that's going to cause contraception and keep it a secret. That's the point. If you wanted to avoid getting pregnant, tell people here's a nice way of
take a tetanus shot.
Contraception. but contraception, that's a nice way. But tell them so they know what they're doing. Don't trick them into doing it so that they can have pregnancy. Now, I don't think, actually, it wasn't stopping the pregnancy. It just was causing more
miscarriages. Colette, we were talking during the break a little bit about where are these vaccines coming from? And I think that that's a really important area of discussion, not only with the vaccines, but with pharmaceuticals in general. You were talking about possibly investigating where the vaccine that you received was manufactured.
Yeah, I had an article. I didn't bring it with me, unfortunately, this morning. But the year that the vaccine was produced in 2008, I had articles stating that it was actually manufactured in China. Okay, going under a United States pharmaceutical label, so that was something that was really eye-opening to me. And once again, it did make me question many other things, as far as the genuineness of our pharmaceutical industry.
It's interesting because I just read about China beverages 10 different times in the past year. Beverages for sale in the United States were turned back because of contamination. So if we have those issues with something as simple as a beverage that would be part of your everyday nutrition, your everyday food consumption, and that is contaminated, how much confidence can we possibly have that the pharmaceuticals produced there, and there are many outside of the vaccine range, that level of confidence, in my opinion, is pretty low.
Well, Janet, they say here, with over 30 companies producing about 1 billion doses of vaccines against 27 diseases a year, China already has the largest vaccine manufacturing capacity in the world. Chinese vaccines, as well as those from India and other emerging markets, are helping drive competition and lower prices. And that statement was written by Bill Gates.
And as I understand it, Bill and Melinda Gates and their foundation is very, very much behind the worldwide vaccination process. They are very, very great supporters, believing that you can eradicate disease by use of these vaccines. Okay. Yeah. Many of the viral vaccines are grown, it begins with a specific virus that can be grown on cells, and unfortunately those cells may come from chicken embryos. So they tell people who have an egg allergy, and that allergy is pretty common, either egg whites, egg yolks, or whole egg. That allergy is pretty common. So when you're injected with a virus that has been grown on that egg protein or egg composition, you have a serious potential health effect.
But the way they used to make viruses, at least at one time the polio virus was in monkeys. They would expose the monkeys to the virus and then extract the antibodies from the virus. And then it was found out that some of these monkeys contained other viruses in them, and that you were giving the person who were getting the vaccine against polio other viruses, specifically the simian virus number 40, which was associated with leukemia. So just how safe are these vaccines to begin with?
It's very, very interesting when you think about that. According to what I've read, that simian virus number 40, once it's injected into you, no matter what you do to support your immune system, how high quality your nutrition status is, and how well your immune system works, that virus never leaves your body. So it's some serious thinking that people need to do before they acquiesce to stepping in line, get your flu shot here. You were talking about the marketing of the flu shot, Dr. Slavin, and that word marketing is very appropriate, because people can go to their grocery market and get a flu vaccine. That's crazy.
I think so.
I know so.
I remember when and there was a time that I acquiesced to a patient's request for a flu vaccine. Now I say we don't do that here, but before I gave them the vaccine, I went through a whole, you know, medical history with them to make sure it was safe for them to take. I don't think they're getting any of that when they go to
walk in the grocery store and roll up your sleeve. Well, doesn't make sense.
Who gives a vaccine? They take someone out of the
It's a nurse. Yeah, because I happen to know one of the nurses who does that.
Just a nurse. Who's direction is she working under?
I don't know.
I just want to make a point about the flu vaccine. For example, there are three different vaccines: egg-based flu vaccine, cell-based flu vaccine, recombinant flu vaccine. You know, usually the reason you see so many different approaches to a problem because none of them work. You know, it's the same thing in medicine. When you have so many varieties of treatment to a particular ailment, because there isn't one that really works, so everybody's trying out different treatments. I think that in itself suggests that there isn't a good vaccine available.
If there are any moms out there, Moms Against Mercury is a website you can visit. KidsWellness.com, Dr. Eric Ridland's website. Very, very important information to save yourself. Colette, thank you so much for joining us. It was a really significant education from you.
Thank you. It's such an honor and privilege just to be here.
All right, thanks, Colette. And I think for our listeners, I hope they just do a little more research on their own when they're trying to decide whether the flu shot's for them or not.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.